Welcome to the debug log number 17. This is part two of our two-part interview with Nicole Lazzaro of Zio Design. And the first part, if you listened to it, which you should if you didn't, she went over her four keys to fun, like the four basic tenets, you know, to think about when you're designing your games and the types of challenges you need to overcome to get players' engagement. And it's awesome, fascinating stuff. We loved it. And if you listen to it, you'll know that it was a really cool conversation. The conversation we had with her was so big that we had to split in two parts. So this is the second part of that. And this time we go into more VR, how to apply those tips to VR and how to, you know, she's doing that in one of her own projects. So without further ado, I give you the Debug Log, episode 17. You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name is Andrew Curry, and once again, I am alone, but that's the bad news. The good news is we are back. I know we've taken a little bit of a hiatus during the Thanksgiving holiday season, and we're about to head into another holiday season, but I promise you we're going to get these episodes out every week. I had some fun stuff happen with my laptop frying, and that was always a great thing to happen, but now we're back, and this can't be a better episode to come back with. Hopefully, we didn't leave everybody hanging with a cliffhanger from last time. If they liked the first part of Nicole's interview, they're like, where's the second part? Why'd I have to wait 3 weeks for the second part? Anyways, here it is. Like I said in the intro, we dive more into VR stuff in this one, how those four keys to fun apply to VR and the challenges. And basically, we also talk about her game, Follow the White Rabbit, which we all got to try at Unite 2015 in Boston, and it was on the Gear, Samsung Gear VR, and that was the first time I ever had to try to get Samsung Gear VR, and her game was really neat, and it was cool to talk about, and so we're excited to get her back on maybe when it actually comes out. But this part of the conversation is great. You'll love it. We'll get to it. I'll stop talking. I'm rambling. I'm excited to be back. Here we go.
And, looking at stuff in VR, it's going to be amazing what we're going to be able to do. I mean, you just see things like, you know, Job Simulator, you know, from Alchemy and, the Gallery, some really cool things that are just getting started on in terms of their ability to pull people in. And looking at the four keys, we've got a really good, they've got some really good starts. But the challenge is that we really want to push it beyond what would an adventure game look like on a PC or a console? What would a simulation game look like on a PC? Well, what does it look like in VR? And really push what that means. And that's going back to design leadership. So amplifying, the types of fun, making it tuned just for VR. So it couldn't happen any other place. So like in our game for Follow the White Rabbit, we have this magician, we have a rabbit, we have some fun with, this, magic, blue diamonds that make things happen. So you have to solve puzzles. And then in the process of solving puzzles, a really cool core, cool, neat thing that the game does is that the space changes around you as you play. So you start in a fairly plain, room in this beautiful cafe looking at the Eiffel Tower, in the afternoon. But by the end of it, you've just created this amazing, steampunky, surrealistic, 3D painting by Magritte that you're standing inside of. And all of the, everything about the space has changed as you've unlocked these puzzles. You couldn't get that sense of being there and having things change, of actually performing real magic, with any other platform. And so that's why, that's why it's in VR. That's why we're doing it. So we're really trying to hit that. What is a real VR experience? And that can be that definitely takes more work to find. But you can do that in the design, and we can do that in the design now. I really believe design always progresses, right? We start with the first cars were called not cars, they were called horseless carriages, right? So we always do, define the new in terms of the old, but we can get out of that phase really fast if your team is really, really keen on innovation and has really good innovation, bones, structures, and, management. Again, that's design leadership, to get them not to just port or clone, but to get them to come up with new and innovative stuff.
And it's good that stuff comes along and shakes up the industry. Because like you said, I mean, I mean, in a lot of ways, the industry's grown and it has a lot of successes when it finally hits a common core, and then people iterate and make that better. It's like, no, we know how to make first-person shooters now, but now we'll make that those really good, and then it gets more people into the games. Or we know how to make really engaging stories and cinematics. We'll get those people into the games. And now we've figured out, just like the first, like you said, the first generation of mobile smartphone games, they were different, you know, varying results. But then once they figured out, oh, you could use this, and also just swiping and pinching, and you realize those levels of engagement, then that just soars. But the problem is it soars up, you know, upon clones and iterations of the same thing. So it's good that this comes along every now and then. We have a new, you know, a new player enters the game, and we have to
we have to have those new learned. Platforms. Yeah. Cause the old platforms, I mean, we are really, we've really solidified, you know, management is kind of, remember that two sides of the same coin, they have to be in balance according to Cotter. You have to have them in balance. And we've really lost, you know, a large part of the industry has lost its way. We've become too management, too risk adverse, too like shipping the same, you know, the same five games. It's like going to Toys R Us and all you see on the shelves are, you know, football, sports equipment, Hot Wheels, Dungeons and Dragons sets, Risk, and maybe this thing called a dollhouse, you know, like a Sims, right?
Right.
And that's it. You know, no tea sets, no puppets, no jump ropes, no, you know, other, you know, no puzzles, you know, no jigsaw puzzles. And, you know, you're only tapping into five things, you know, five kind of core experiences. And so we definitely don't want to port the only five experiences onto the Vive, onto Oculus, onto, you know, Samsung Gear VR, onto Google Cardboard, on a John, you know, all of these different platforms. We definitely don't want to just port over five games. That would be a crime. It's new territory. Let's get out there and create these amazing, you know, emotional experiences that only VR can deliver. Because VR, it's the ultimate entertainment platform. You know, it's got the, you know, the engagement of movies, you know, the emotional engagement of movies, and it has the participation of games, you know, that, and it's it's combined. And so it, you know, it's the first platform where it even remotely captures the feeling I had when I was a kid. You know, I grew up in Wonderland. I grew up overseas.
You know, yeah, I heard climbing, about you in Egypt. Yeah, and stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Climbing pyramids and, you know, exploring fire temples and riding camels, you know, across the desert in Iran, you know, all kinds of things. You know, my family was stationed overseas for, you know, part of my growing up. And, you know, so growing up in Wonderland, I want to go back and I want to bring all my friends.
And that's the thing too. I think people, I mean, of the naysayers, I mean, just because when everything gets hyped to a degree, there's always people that come out and say, hey, this is just a joke. This is not there yet. Like with VR, but I really think they don't understand. This isn't like a periphery that's new, like a Rock Band fad or something. Mm-hmm. There's two reasons that this is like gonna stick around. And I think because it's finally reached its time. It's because the same way that smartphones happened and there's like, oh, we have some games on there. That's kind of fun. And like, oh, that's a distraction. But then smartphones became our lives. We run our lives from our phones. And so it's the same. I actually think VR is the same way. People, even the outside media is looking at, you know, they made fun of the Time magazine cover. And even that article was a little weird. All that stuff is about, it's for games. And that's how they're pushing it. And that's what's really driving development. And that's great. But it's going to become part of our lives. Like you mentioned, reliving the childhood experiences. That's like a no-brainer that when kids are, you know, kids 5 years, I mean, maybe in a couple years from now, instead of watching some, you know, 5-year-old, 10-year-old Nova video about Egypt, they're going to go, okay, we're going to go to the pyramids and we're going to walk inside of it today. Put on your headsets.
Yeah, exactly.
And it translates that scale. That's something we've never experienced, but our kids and grandkids will be experiencing that. That's crazy. I mean, but that's a no-brainer. I mean, and even into the sense of, I always talk about this, like even just live streaming 360 video, which isn't exciting as game development, but that's totally going to be the standard. Ah. If you could get on, you know, we're in debate season and all these things. If you could, if you could get on whatever, I don't know if you want to get on one last night, but other ones, you could go, hey, I can be sitting in the front row. Instead of watching on TV where they're changing camera angles, and they're already doing some of that with YouTube video and 360. I think Conan O'Brien did that.
Yeah.
But that's totally going to be the norm. Instead of live streaming some YouTube video, you're just going to get in and, oh, I'm there in the concert now.
Right.
That's totally, I mean, that's definitely going to happen.
And the neat thing about that is like 1 million people could have that seat courtside, one seat, you could share one seat courtside in virtual reality, which is kind of like a freaky, like, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, I was there too. You were there too. That's great.
Yeah. Right. Or, you know, you could go have, you know, dinner with, you know, Taylor Swift and five of her friends, and 1 million people could have that fifth seat, you know, at the dinner table.
I mean, people laugh at that, but people would pay hundreds of dollars for experience like that. And it's totally possible because it's like now, because you also have the rise of things like Periscope now. So you make Periscope a 360 video experience. There you go.
Right. But all that said, I think it's definitely a use case. We can absolutely feel, mm-hmm. But it's still not the true value of what VR is going to deliver.
It's not a crafted experience. It's like you can watch YouTube videos of kids doing dumb things, but it's not better than some movie that actually has a message and a point and artistry to it.
So there's also the, you know, like if you do the difference between designing, like if you have a theater background, mine's more in film, but I'm a filmmaker more than a theater person. But in, you know, there's a difference between a stage play and like theater in the round, right? And VR is theater in the round where you have, you know, the play is happening, you know, in the middle. And then, you know, the audience is all around it like a donut. The way in which that changes the blocking and the way the performance is, and certainly even the way the play is often written, is different. And I think that's also true of VR. So we get these, you know, staged experiences. Like Texas Hold'em, right? Texas Hold'em did not exist. It was not a poker game, but it was designed to solve a problem. It's like, hey, we want professional poker on TV. How are you going to get, so we invented a game.
Right.
You know, so we had the shared cards, the hold cards, the audience can see both. And then players can't.
Yeah.
And so there's that the sense, like, how do they change the game in order to fit this new medium, you know, poker going on broadcast television? Well, same thing here. How are these experiences going to change to, you know, be part of VR? I think the interaction, you know, obviously we talked about the sense of presence. We can break that down, you know, to 10 factors. We can say, you know, immersion, same thing. We can break that down to another 10. Which is what we, you know, do with our clients when we're using, you know, doing UX and you know, player experience, emotion architecture work on their games. But it's really all about how do you feel as you move, you know, through these, as you interact with this world, and how does that world respond to you? And the idea of a core loop is really getting challenged. The idea of death is, you know, player death is really challenged. You know, a lot of games create tension. The way games create tension is going to be, that playbook is going to get completely rewritten for VR. Because you can't, at least in these early generation systems, you can't, as people are starting to get used to them, you really can't kill the player. Because you want them to feel powerful and omniscient and amazing. And then it's kind of hard if you kill the player and have them restart. They're much less tolerant of that than they would be on a normal console game. Because in hardcore games, you know, you're like, you know, and I'm like, you know, and the game says, you suck. And the player goes, I know I suck, but I'm going to do it again, you know. And they keep, you know, Super Meat Boy challenge, right? You'll just keep beating your head against it in a console and mobile game. In virtual reality, it's hard now. Yeah.
Nigel, I have, after going through the four keys of fun, I have several questions.
Oh, sure.
So in Easy Fun, we talked about games that have like free roaming worlds and stuff like that to include curiosity as an emotion in the player. But what about the games that doesn't have that type of game? How they can include Easy Fun in their games, like mobile games, puzzle games and stuff like that, that they don't have a player to a character to go through a world.
Yeah. So exploration, each key to fun has a certain set of emotions is kind of the outcome, right? These are the states, the blended states we want the player to be, that these are the sensations in the body going from wonder, you know, to the feeling of victory, to the feeling of social bonding, and then back again, the feeling of satisfaction and obviously you can break that down more. But each one you think about, there's a cluster of actions that will create those states. So just because you have no exploration does not mean you don't have easy fun, that you can't have easy fun. And just drawing back to our beginning of our conversation, it's pretty much the, you know, like the field of controls. It was exploration, fantasy, you know, story and all that. But if it's a puzzle game, just the field of controls and making a move. Tetris, Bejeweled, Candy Crush, all of those games are full of easy, fun kinds of experiences.
A very good example of this would be I don't know if you've seen it, Eduardo, but the UI in Destiny. So when you move around your mouse, it has this little circle, and there's like this parallax effect with the mm-hmm. background. Mm-hmm. And that literally, when I'm sitting, like I'll be talking to Andrew or something while we're playing, and while I'm sitting there, I'm just moving the mouse or moving the cursor, and that engages me enough to make me just sit there and just do that.
Yeah, you're doodling with the UI.
Exactly.
Right. There are these micro loops, you know, and what we talk about, that's sort of what we call a micro flow state, where you're in a meeting, you might be doodling with a pen, and people do that often too. It's just because it takes up just enough of attention so that you're completely full and, you know, listening to what's going on. If you didn't have that, you wouldn't be at all, you might lose focus.
Right.
Okay. So going to the next hard fun.
Yeah.
Is there any game that has like your favorite implementation of hard fun, like special challenges or stuff like that, that you think is interesting?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have the my favorite game that I wish had more fun, hard fun.
Yeah.
Is on the Vive, the portal demo, you know, where the little, basically you're assembling, you know, this big 3D, device comes out.
And yeah, we've seen it. We haven't got a chance to do it yet though.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I really want to have that as hard fun, so we can actually take it apart and put it back together in some. I mean, they're doing something else with it that the demo.
Once you combine that with like a game like Kerbal, you know, where you're making your own elements, and so that would be amazing, you know.
Yeah. I think that would be really like Kerbal or what's the other one? Lightspeed or something like that. I forget it was a two-player one. Well, and then basically another one though is Keep Talking and Nobody Dies.
Right. Yeah, I saw this.
Or Nobody Explodes.
Yeah.
That's obviously it's a communication game. So one person has a headset on. If you haven't played it, one person has a headset on with a bomb in front of them in 3D, and then the other person is outside of VR with the manual to defuse the bomb. And so the idea behind the game is you have to communicate. It's a two-player game, so they have to cooperate and describe, and obviously neither person could see what the other is, so it's hilarious in that
those games like a Space Team. You ever seen Space Team on iOS?
That's like, the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, Space that's Team. The one.
Yes.
Yeah, those are the ones that would work, where it's like four players connect and they're like, reroute the flux capacitor, like, okay, I'll do right, it. Yeah. Gives each person a random command and somebody, oh, that's me, I'll do that. That's right, that stuff right. would be amazing if you're on the same spaceship bridge and you're in VR and doing that stuff. It would be neat.
Exactly, yeah. And then I think that gets around a lot of because the social is verbal, that gets around a lot of the problems of, having a 3D avatar that looks kind of creepy and kind of like you, but actually more creepy than like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to do avatars really well. And the emotions that you want, if you're trying to replace, and a lot of folks are doing this and just like, oh man, I don't know if you know how big a challenge you're taking on, is that they want to, they have like, what would Skype look like, in virtual reality?
Yeah,
it's great if like one person has the headset, if 12 people have the headset on, and then the one person they're looking at doesn't have the headset because you can see the person's face.
Right. But who knows? I mean, maybe they have mobile capture rigs, like they
do. That's the promise. Like, oh yeah, we'll do it. We'll fix it. We'll have an avatar. It'll be amazing.
Right.
It's one thing to have an avatar in World of Warcraft. Right. A Tauren or an elf or something like that, a dwarf, and then Avatar, the movie, they deliberately made people look like cat people. So you didn't trigger the uncanny valley, right? Trying to replace real social interaction with my real face, you know.
Well, I don't even think, but it might not be replacing real social interaction. It might be replacing Facebook chats. You know what I mean? Like Facebook didn't buy it for the games. They're going to do it for the games, but they bought it for a longer term reason. I mean, they bought it, yeah. I mean, for that whole, you know, Ready Player One reason of this Oasis where you have this kind of, you know, and that's, and so maybe by then we'll figure out some kinds of, because I mean, but you also, you're true. Then there runs a risk of being so immersive where we all, like, and I don't know if you read that book, but like you live
Of course I read it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you have. Like, then we're societies to the point where we don't care that the government's taking over and we live in slums because we just care about getting online. And so, but I mean, that is the
Well, that's what we did with television years ago. So it's not really a.
That's true. That's true. But I mean,
and then the internet, right? And social media now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can see how that would be. I mean, I kind of think it's going to be more. I think there might be a hybrid of VR and AR, you know? Like, I think they're separate now just because the technology isn't as great to.
You are correct. Yeah. Right. That's definitely.
Because I think
hardware.
I think more lines like, right, because you have an AR headset that helps you every day, but then it completely envelops, and now it's VR, right?
So they're doing something similar with that with the like the Project Tango tablet, aren't they? Like, so it's like a little bit of AR and a little bit of VR. It's really immersive and cool.
Yeah, any mobile VR experience has a camera. Most, you know, any VR, they have a camera on there. It may not be depth sensing. You know, RealSense and Tango, you know, both are depth sensors, but anyone has a camera. And so you just turn the camera on and then now you've got AR and then you can just simply like set the translucency dial, right? And it becomes, you know, more and more opaque until finally you're in virtual reality. So it is a continuum. Right. But now we're kind of challenged because of some hardware stuff and then the performance right now. The last test we ran, which was actually more than, you know, like 6 months ago, the VR or the camera feed was really just not fast enough to get any kind of really good tracking. It felt much too juddery for our purposes. We have a very smooth game. We really, as the engineer, I really prioritize frame rate and the designer over everything. So you just felt like you were there. You couldn't tell.
Nicole,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, all the lights are baked. You know, all the design is really like, you know, geometry. Yeah, we've done some cool things with the art to look really interesting, create a great experience, and then also be highly performant.
Mm-hmm. Great, Nicole. Based on your experience, we have all these keys, these four keys to fun, but how many of them a game needs to be considered successful or not to say, okay, this game is going to be successful, but a successful game needed, like the four of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So the four keys to fun, which you can, you know, download for free on our website at xeodesign.com. Essentially what we found is that you pretty much need, and this is also with our 20 years of consulting, is that you pretty much need three out of the four, you know, of the four keys. You know, so you need three out of the four of the keys to have an experience that's really, you know, rich and engaging. And you'll find that, you know, if you try this, you know, management technique of like, well, let's clone something, a lot of times those clones will fail because they failed to copy, you know, all of the keys in the app, in the best-selling app that worked, in the best-selling game that worked. So they might copy the hard fun, but they completely lost it. You know, they didn't put the detail in the cursor, you know, that you were talking about with Destiny. They didn't put the detail, you know, in the character reactions for the Sims, you know, the emotion states on the Sims, which is super important for the way that game works, what makes that game work. So that's really important. Even if you're just cloning, you want to be sure you capture all of those. And if you think about it, it's got a very strong psychological basis because we move from moments of discovery to moments of challenge to, you know, the emotions of mastery, you know, the feeling of mastery.
That's how learning works. Yeah.
That's how learning works. Uh-huh. And all games teach, right? All games teach.
Is there any combination of the three keys that you see repeatedly in games, in successful games?
I think that every genre tends to have a slightly different balance of the four keys. And then different players prefer different keys, but it's usually a combination, right? They prefer a little bit more, you know, they're a little bit more, it's kind of like poker, right? When you're playing poker with friends, you know, you always have that, like that conversation halfway through the night where, you know, some people are there for, you know, the game. Right. And some people are there just to socialize. Like, that's okay if we take forever for our turns, because we're just really, right. Poker's the excuse to have a conversation.
That's what I used to call that. Halo with my friends. I used to call it man phone, because me and my buddy don't, we would never call each other and talk for 3 hours. That's just not something we do, but of course we'll just shoot stuff and talk about, you know, what's going on with our lives.
Oh yeah, there you go, man phone. I love it. Exactly, that's exactly it. And then there's other folks that are like, no, this is poker. We want to win. We want to master the system. We want to whatever. And so you can tell some people are in the in the hard fun. They want to master the system, right? And other people are there mostly just to socialize.
Yeah, I guess now people phone is getting more and more used since social medias have this great impact in our lives, and it's a great way to include more players in a game. I guess developers are using it more.
So can you say that? Can you say that again? Sorry.
Sure. I guess that people phone is getting more used now in games that social medias. Are more active in our lives.
Exactly. Yeah, social media is, and it's like, you know, if you think about people fun in the social media context, it's the like button on Facebook. And essentially, if you think about it, we're all kind of just primates, and liking a post, what is that? I like that your cat died. You know, I like that you, you know, what you had for dinner. What? Well, it's just, we're primates, and it's just me. The like button in Facebook is just me picking a digital flea off of you.
Right. We had a post this week saying that we had an episode mess up. We have technical difficulties. We can't release an episode this week. And people, a bunch of people like that. I was like, what? Why are you liking that?
They're acknowledging it, not like.
Yeah. I think maybe they're saying good props for you guys saying that and not saying anything, but still it caught me off guard. I was like, that's not a good thing, but okay, fine.
exactly. You mentioned a little bit ago about like avatars and not having that super realistic look to them. So do you find that you still get that necessary amount of, I guess, immersion when you use, say, stylized characters over realistic?
Well, stylized characters, you pour yourself into, and that's an easy, fun technique. The inclusion of a lot of detail and then the removal of a lot of detail is important. So if you think about the emotional response of like a G.I. Joe or a Barbie, those characters are deliberately, you know, not too realistic. They're stereotyped. They're pulled back a bit. They don't have specific character traits like you would like a Buzz Lightyear, or, you know, even Woody from the Pixar films. And the idea is that they are vehicles for your imagination. You pour yourself into the world. They're the, because the detail is lacking, you then like are figuring it out.
Yeah, it worked with Zelda.
So it's like, yeah. And then like, or the Sims speak Simlish, right? And so it's like, you know, plane crash, heart broken, money, mountain. What did that mean? And then you make up the story about what that means in your own head. So if you don't include all of the detail, you know, if you only include some, that gives players room to like make up their own stuff. So when you do characters that are more stylized, and our art in Follow White Rabbit is very stylized, kind of steampunk and kind of impressionistic, it gives the brain something to do, to figure out and identify with and roll forward with. If you go too realistic or hyper-realistic, then you just sort of accept it as real, hopefully. But more likely than not, you're going to get, you're caught into what we call the uncanny valley, which I'm sure you guys have come up in the podcast before.
Yeah.
The idea that comes from robotics is that the more realistic you make a robotic motion, more like real life it is, generally the better people, the more satisfied people are with the experience, you know, so more realism is good. More realism is happy users. But the, once you get too close, then what happens is really strange. Like once you're almost there, then instead of continuing to go up, if the slope doesn't go up, you know, it goes up, you know, as you increase satisfaction with more realism, suddenly satisfaction when you're almost at real goes way down. And then that plummet triggers what we call disgust. It's the emotion disgust. Mm-hmm. And that basically is triggered in your brain saying, wait, I've just eaten a poison mushroom. I'm going to throw up now. Or that's a zombie. I'm going to get out of the way. Or that person is not, that walk cycle is not right. And I'm really creeped out.
Body snatcher.
Yeah, exactly. So you're really sensitive. There's something not right with that person, or there's not something not right with me. And then that's why more stylized characters, you know, work best. And, you know, kind of speaking of like emotional responses, it's true in this art style. It's also true in the platform. And that's something that VR really needs to, look at. It's one of the three questions we ask every developer that we work with. And that is, what is the emotion profile? What are the emotions you're targeting? Because each technology that we've worked with, you know, from the first iPhone game that I designed to, you know, talking pens to, you know, talking dinosaurs, to, you know, stuff on the Wii, you know, Star Wars on the Wii, is that what are the emotions that really work on this platform? If you think back when there was Facebook games, they were really about, you know, three things. They're about people, plants, and pets. Most social games, you know, from Farmville to, you know, Mafia Wars and all that, the people, plants, and pets. And that's because they all created the social, they all had caretaking mechanics. And the caretaking mechanics created social emotions, which was why people were on Facebook in the first place. So the gameplay matched the emotions that people already expected and enhanced that platform. If you look at an iPhone, it's a pretty amazing OS because you think about it, you swipe, you pinch, you zoom. Like if I'm sharing my photos with you, you're stroking the glass. If you're looking at my photos, if you do those same gestures, but on the back of my hand, you would better be on a date or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that generates oxytocin, so much social emotion, and how brilliant of Apple to create a UI, a user experience that generates social emotion on a device that has your phone, your contacts, your email. Just by making a call, I feel closer to my friends. So yeah, this
I like that whole statement about how you know, if you did that to somebody else, that you made those gestures to somebody, that you better be on a fourth date. You know,
exactly.
You wouldn't be pinching and swiping across. You know, I like that because it is, you have an intimate relationship with your phone. That sounds funny to say, but it is. I mean, it's true. Yeah. You know, that's your personal AI.
It's a personal device. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's in a very personal spot on your body. It's contacting your palm of your hand. You grasp that hand. It's very, your hand around it. It's a very personal part of the body. It creates a lot of very strong experiences that way. Social experiences that way. And so if you think about the question is, what is the emotion architecture? What are the emotion profiles for VR experiences? What are the emotions that VR can do that stage plays can't, that movies can't, that books can't, that games are not good at? What is VR? And those VR emotions, that core set of VR experiences, that's when we get games and experience in VR experiences, VR movies or whatever we're going to call them, when we get those experiences creating those emotions, that's when we're going to hit true VR. That's when the platform's really going to take off.
And to bring everything back to, I guess, one of the points you made earlier is the only way we're going to get those is with more leadership and maybe not less management, but maybe a little bit more conscious thought towards that leadership. Because, I mean, exactly. I know for at least our company, one of our biggest issues is we've been in VR for, you know, something like 20 years now, and we just want to stick with what works. Instead of trying to innovate and move along with the technology, now we want to just sit back and say, "Oh no, it's fine if it just does this and only has, say, just the serious games part." But they don't want to add that other extra, you know, little bit to make it more engaging.
Exactly.
So yeah, exactly. I think it's a really good point.
I think the reason behind the purpose, what the intent is behind the four keys and behind these 36 design, you know, principles for VR. Is that is to help people help their leadership techniques. They're how you lead the design. They're how you innovate. They're how you think about how you can help by giving them to your teams. You can help them think about and have conversations of what they can change to make it a more innovative and more native, super important experience on VR. And it's completely natural that we clone. It's completely natural that we avoid risk. It's completely natural that we design things in context of what we've already
corporations
experienced.
Are behind it.
Yeah. Well, and then you've got, you know, then you have a timeline, you have you know, you have Jira, you know, you've got your project management tool, you got your Excel spreadsheet or whatever. Right. It's like, oh my God, we got to make this deadline. We have this, you know, the platform coming out before the end of the year. Yeah, right. Exactly. So all you gotta those deliver. Things.
So like, this is a good final question because we want to be respectful of your time. So just because all of our listeners are developers and designers and artists and, you know, programmers, all that stuff. If you can condense down just some advice, whether it's VR, or just design related, just what do you tell to aspiring developers and new developers that you meet? Like, what's just a lasting piece of advice you'd like to give to them?
Awesome. If follow the white rabbit.
Broad of a question.
It's to follow the white rabbit. It's to follow your dream. Imagine the holodeck. Yeah. You can't deliver the holodeck right now. Well, you know, we've actually got some designs that are pretty close. And I've seen some amazing, you know, stuff that's not out yet, right, in the public eye. And it's pretty cool. So the holodeck is definitely coming. But I would advise people to look at your team. Look at what resources you have. Don't overscope, right? But what is one slice of that VR dream that you can deliver in the context of your, you know, your current situation, your current constraints? Stay in design as long as you can, you know, with your whole design cycle. Prototype early and often, and really look at what are those emotional responses to the actions people are taking, you know, in that world, and just shoot above cloning and porting. Come up with some new experiences, some new gameplay, some new movies that could only happen. Have that be your litmus test. This could only happen in VR. Right. That's when we're going to get this amazing set of experiences that will just, you know, lift the lid on what we think. We're trapped inside this, you know, this 30, 40 year old industry of games. We're trapped inside this huge cosmic egg of what we consider games to be. VR is this platform that is completely outside that egg. So we need to crack it open and deliver this next generation of gaming.
Well said. So that's good. Nicole, we can't thank you enough for coming on the show today.
Oh yeah.
This has been a blast.
Thank you very much.
Have you had fun? I've had fun.
Yeah, we love this.
Oh yeah. We loved it.
Now you're on the hook to come back. So because we thought it'd be 2015, but it looks like 2016 is going to be the year of VR. So once these devices come out and they get into the wild, we're going to have to get you back and comment. And,
yeah, I would love it. I would love it. It'd be great.
All right, cool. Very cool. So before you go, where can people just get in contact with you, or just what's the best place to catch you online?
Exactly. Yeah. So you can go, you can download the white papers are available at xeodesign.com. And you can follow me on Twitter with my name. I'm at Nicole Lazzaro. So that's NicoleLazzaro. And you can reach out to me on both of those platforms. And there is more contact information on my website as well. And I love hearing from folks. And you can look at, if you want to sign up for the beta for Follow the White Rabbit, we would love to have you participate in this adventure.
Yeah, we recommend it. I got a chance to check it out. That's what you had on the Gear VR, right?
We did. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. So you can sign up for the beta at, we have a short code. So bit.ly, bit.ly.com /FWR beta. So all lowercase. So bit.ly.com FWR for Follow White Rabbit beta. You can sign up there. And if you want to donate to help us get the experience out, you can go to bit.ly.com/FWR donate. And those and you can help us that way as well. But yeah. Come on, go out and make some really great stuff and come back and show me. I'm really excited to see what everyone's doing.
Yeah, cool. You might get a lot of questions from our community after this. So
and we do design, you know, we're consultants. I have a design, you know, consulting hat I wear. So I'm happy to look at people's experiences and, you know, give them some advice on how to make it better. We do player testing and all that kinds of things.
We'll add you to our we have a private Facebook group, the Debug Lounge. So that and it's just all developers just kind of talking shop like this. So we'll add you to that and you can join in whenever you feel.
Great.
Whenever you get a chance.
That sounds awesome.
All right. Well, cool. Well, right. Thank you so much. You can't thank you enough. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Sounds great. I had a great time. Awesome.
All right.
So game on.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Game All right. Awesome.
All right. That was Nicole Lazzaro. Again, we can't thank her enough for coming on the show and having to wait 3 weeks between her parts. It ended up being a great interview. We loved it. We're going to love to have her back on when she gets closer to releasing her game. I can't wait for you guys to check it out. It was really cool. Coming up on the Debug Log schedule, of course, again, there's no game of the week this week because I'm by myself and nobody wants to hear me talk by myself. But we do have a couple great episodes coming out, a few episodes that are really already in the can. We did our interview with Oscar Clark from Unity. He's one of the Unity evangelists. Had a great, an awesome conversation, really deep in design stuff and player theory and engagement, all that stuff. So that's something you're really going to enjoy. And then we have a really great episode about communicating your game mechanics, or basically kind of like tutorializing your games to players. And Ryan and Mabina and I sat down and had a great discussion. So those are great ones coming up. We're going to start recording this week again. So they should be every week, hot and heavy, just like you like it. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, there's a few different methods. One, the most direct way is you can send us an email. You send it thedebuglog@gmail.com. And that's where you can send us any questions you have, you know, any opinions about the show, whatever. And if you have an opinion about the show, also the great thing to do is go to iTunes and give us a review and a rating. That actually helps us a bunch get out there to all the people. If you don't like iTunes, if you're a Google person, pretty soon we're going to be in Google Play. But until then, if you just can't stomach going to iTunes, just recommend it to a friend. Tell a few of your fellow developers about it. We've gotten a lot of fun feedback of developers we've met in real life and then found out that we actually did the show that they listened to. So everybody would like it, I think. It's fun dev talk. We shoot the shit. Also, speaking of shooting the shit, the best place to do that in the Debug Log universe is on the Debug Lounge. That's our personal, private Facebook group where we just share experiences and share things. I mean, we've had a lot of people asking questions and a lot of feedback and just interaction going on there. And hopefully, as we get less busy going into the holidays, we have more time off, we can all get more engaged in there because we get to work on our more personal projects. I know all the Debug Log guys were starting to work on some bigger game projects. I can't talk too much about it now, but that'll be fun. And I'm sure we'll be asking questions there more than actually talking. Like, how do we do this, guys? So the Debug Lounge is a place where developers can share all the stuff. To join the Debug Lounge, the easiest way is to go to our website and sign up for our newsletter, which we will have probably one by the end of the year, another edition of it. But until then, we're not going to spam you. So just sign up for that. It's The Loop. And once you sign up, we'll get a notification and Eduardo will invite you to the Facebook group. So do that. We'll have fun in there, I'm sure. And actually introduce yourself once you join, because that's a big part of it. So anyways, I think that's it for now. I'm excited. You should be excited. I know the guys are excited. I promise I didn't kill them all. That's what it seems like. We did one episode with just me, and then we waited 3 weeks and still just me. But they're still alive. They're healthy for the most part, probably. And they'll be back next week, in fact. So until next time, I'm still Andrew @Andrew_Curry on Twitter. We'll see you next time.